For decades, Elizabeth Elliot has influenced many people through her books, timeless teaching, and courageous faith. Let's join Elizabeth now as she encourages us once again to live life to its fullest as disciples of Jesus Christ.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, continuing my talks about Oswald Chambers, the biography written by David McCasland called Abandoned to God. Chambers had become a very well-known preacher. He was still a very young man, born in 1874 in Scotland. And in 1908, he was invited again to the United States for 2 months of camp meetings. But this time, he was not going to be alone on the steamer. Mrs. Amelia Hobbs had written to say that her daughter Gertrude, whom he knew from his brother Arthur's church in Eltham, would be traveling to America on the same ship as he. She hoped it wouldn't be imposing to ask if he'd look out for her and give her a hand, especially when they arrived in New York. Life was always interesting, in the providence of God. Gertrude Hobbs was 24 years old when she watched the docks of Liverpool slip away behind the churning foam of the SS Baltic's propellers. In the early 20th century, it was not unheard of for a young woman to make a transatlantic voyage unescorted, but neither was it common. The fact that Chambers happened to be traveling on the same boat added an element of certainty and security, more for her mother than for herself. Gertrude was on her way to New York City to visit her good friend Marion, who said secretarial jobs were plentiful. It was a grand adventure, and she was quite unconcerned that she had only $16 in her purse. As the ship steamed up to full speed, Oswald's thoughts ranged back to his voyage with Nakada on this same ship 18 months before. That was when he was on his way to Japan with this Japanese. That journey had been pure comradeship and adventure, but this was different. Not a foot away from him stood a lovely, intelligent young woman, whom he had known casually for some 2.5 years. With her head turned toward the receding coastline of England, he had a chance to study her face for the first time. He had to look down because the top of her head just reached the level of his chin. He saw that her brown hair was parted just to one side of the middle and swept back into a bun. Almond-shaped, blue eyes twinkled under arched brows, and her mouth rested in a straight line that resembled a kind of perpetual smile. How would he describe her face in a word? Pretty? Soft? Kind? It was a view of Gertrude he had never seen from the pulpit or even across the tea table. Why was he seeing it now? Strange thoughts and feelings rose within him, and he wasn't sure if he liked them or not. Well, of course, you don't want me to skip any of this, I'm sure, but we don't have time to read all of it. They took walks on the decks. He learned more about her when she was a child. She'd had a lot of bronchitis. She'd left school to help her mother at home. And she had one single ambition, to become secretary to the Prime Minister of England. So she studied Pitman's shorthand at home, and she was learning to type. Knowing that many young men and women could take shorthand, she therefore decided to outdistance the field in speed and accuracy. Mrs. Hobbs took turns reading articles and book selections as Gertrude transcribed them into shorthand. Not content to function like a machine, Gertrude listened for the sense and context of what was read. Along with speed and accuracy, she sought understanding as well. 2 weeks before her 15th birthday, her father died at the age of 50, leaving the family in financial difficulty. Her sister Daisy finished school and secured a good position, continuing to live at home and contributing to the family income. By the time Gertrude was old enough to work full-time, she could take shorthand dictation at the phenomenal rate of 250 words a minute, faster than anyone was likely to talk. This skill won her a position as secretary to a high-ranking officer at the Woolwich Arsenal, Britain's sprawling munitions factory some 10 miles east of London. But now she was going to America to an adventure where she was hoping to get some more training in shorthand and typing in order to be the Prime Minister's private secretary. Every day, aboard the SS Baltic, she and Oswald walked together, ate together, discovered new things about each other. She admired his keen mind, his bright humor, and the deep love he held for Jesus Christ. Oswald was impressed with everything about Biddy, from her determination and ability to her love for animals and her genuine interest in people. He had a way of always giving people nicknames, and although her name was Gertrude, he decided on that voyage that he would call her Biddy, and Biddy she was. When the voyage ended, they parted company, but a steady correspondence quickly developed. He wrote to her from Cincinnati on June 20th, a day before he plunged into the camp meeting at God's Bible School. "Be very patient and very confident in him. Do not be a little bit perturbed that you cannot answer Mr. Moore's questions regarding God. God is not a fact of common sense, but of revelation. Tell him God lives, evidenced to your heart, when you abandoned your right to yourself, and let him take the rule." On July 3rd, after two draining weeks of preaching and counseling, his tone was more personal in a letter to Biddy. "It's a great refreshment to think of you, for I've had such a drenching with the sad and sordid sorrows of so many blighted lives. But glory be to our God, how blessedly he saves and delivers and heals." During July, Oswald's travels took him from Cincinnati to camp meetings in North Attleboro, Massachusetts, and Old Orchard, Maine. New York City and Biddy were right on the way. Undoubtedly, he called on her as he traveled north and again before he left for England. An August 19 letter indicates a rapid progression of their feelings for each other. Quote, "All in his good time, we have the love, thank God, and the discipline of our characters alone or blended. It is all in his hands." Biddy remained in New York to finish her job commitment, while Oswald returned to a demanding schedule of League of Prayer meetings in Britain. For the first time in many years, however, he had someone to whom he could pour out his deepest thoughts and feelings. On August 20th, he wrote, "The great hunger is on me, more than ever, for him and his work. Oh, how few love him, and how feeble is my most passionate love. I scarcely know anyone who is consumed for God. It is all for creeds and phrases and belief. But for him, how few. To know him, that's it. How I fear and hate the pattern and print of the age." And then August 23rd, Sunday night, "I have finished my second Sunday at Wesley's Chapel. God, as usual, undertook. Oh, that I had more of heart and brain and body for him. My mood tonight is one of sorrow that I cannot serve and be spent for him better." On October 18th, he wrote to Biddy's mother from Plymouth. "Dear Mrs. Hobbs, do you object to my corresponding with your youngest daughter, Gertrude? I love her and naturally would like to write her and see her occasionally as my missions allow. But we should like to know that this is with your sanction and certain knowledge of the kind of friendship forming. I return to London on Friday, October 23rd. I shall esteem your reply as early as convenient. Highly. Yours heartily, Oswald Chambers." His letters to Biddy continued. Mrs. Hobbs replied immediately, but it indicated that instead of clearing the air, Oswald had merely muddied the water. He wrote to her again, "Thank you very much for your letter, and I am deeply concerned that my letter gave you more trouble than it otherwise would if I had only thought to have told you the sort of friendship I mean. I certainly do not mean platonic, which to me is apt to mean the meanest or most ordinary of all friendships. But I do mean a friendship with a view to engagement and ultimate marriage." Good advice in there, isn't there, for some of you young people that don't know how to go about finding a wife, talk to her mother. Regarding a mere ordinary friendship, says Oswald, I should never have thought it necessary to ask your sanction, but I could not hold correspondence with your daughter, having in my mind and heart what I have, without your certain knowledge. Please forgive my causing you unnecessary anxiety over and above the inevitable anxiety such a letter as mine must certainly cause a mother. My present position as a missioner is just temporary and quite a godsend. It's been a good break to me from my college tutorial work, and already permanent work is inviting me, and as soon as that is settled, I should like to become engaged. Again, thanking you for your letter, and hoping you will be able to reply to me before I leave here Friday morning. I am yours heartily, Oswald Chambers. After posting the letter, he walked along the waterfront and gazed out at Plymouth's famous harbor. Far out on Penley Point, the lighthouse cast its beam of welcome and warning. You're almost home, it seemed to say, to ships off the rugged coast of Devon. Beware of the rocks as you near your goal. Oswald thought how quickly God had broken into his life of solitary service and given him a love for Biddy.
Anything, if offered to God, can and will become your gateway to joy. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.